What do you recommend for a patient who is progressing on osimertinib? Do you look at the PD-L1 level? Do you consider checkpoint inhibitor, chemotherapy? How do you approach a patient like that?
So first, I would say that, while we know about resistance to osimertinib when it's used in the second line setting, there's still so much we don't know about first line use of osimertinib. What will the resistance profiles look like there? One, I don't think we'll see T790M, but I anticipate we'll still see that C797S. Will we see more lineage changes? So will we actually see more transformation to small cell lung cancer? I think that's certainly an argument to do a biopsy in that setting. And recently, there have been a few case reports of additional rearrangements, including RET rearrangements in patients who have EGFR mutations at baseline. So I think that there is certainly a role for repeating a biopsy in patients who have started with first-line osimertinib and who are becoming resistant to therapy in order to help guide what we do next. And the other thing I didn't mention is MET amplification. I think that is something, it was one of the first mechanisms of resistance identified in patients receiving EGFR inhibitors. And as we hit the target harder, we may see more bypass signaling pathways like MET amplification. And that may direct us to clinical trials. So there is an ongoing study of osimertinib plus MET inhibition. That's the TATTON trial. And so I do think that there's value in checking.
So again, in the absence of any of these research opportunities, how do you approach the patient clinically outside a trial who's progressing on osimertinib?
Yeah, great question. So if a patient, doesn't have clinical trial opportunities, they continue to have a non-small cell lung cancer post osimertinib, I think the standard of care in that setting is platinum doublet chemotherapy. Now, we could talk about in light of, and I would say the standard should be platinum doublet chemotherapy regardless of PD-L1 expression. Now, but we could talk about the IMpower150 data, which, as a reminder, IMpower150, this was a large phase III study. There were three different arms, and the arms were carbo, paclitaxel, bev was the control arm, versus carbo, paclitaxel, atezo, it's one experimental arm, or the quadruple, which is carbo, paclitaxel, bev, plus atezolizumab. Now, one of the reasons that this trial has gotten a lot of press is that this is one of the few chemotherapy plus IO studies to include EGFR and ALK-positive patients. Early on, we've recognized that EGFR and ALK-positive patients, they tend to be less responsive to checkpoint inhibitors. We've done some of our own work, as well as in various clinical trials of single-agent checkpoints. We've seen that the response rates among EGFR patients is low, generally anywhere from, in our own series, it was about 3%. And in the randomized studies, there was no improvement in survival with checkpoint inhibitor compared to docetaxel among EGFR mutant patients, and that was seen across multiple studies. And even when you enrich for high PD-L1 expression, so this is the Atlantic study, looked at the role of durvalumab in PD-L1 high patients who had EGFR or ALK. And for the purpose of this study, high PD-L1 expression was 25% or higher. And even among EGFR patients who are PD-L1 high, the response rate there was 12%. So I think for me that's an argument that we shouldn't be doing single-agent checkpoints in EGFR patients. But IMpower150 does raise the question of if you have an EGFR patient who's already received their targeted therapy and they're progressing and they don't have another targeted therapy option, does chemotherapy plus immunotherapy plus Bev make sense for that patient population? And IMpower150 would suggest that, there was an improvement in progression-free survival among EGFR patients who received the quadruplet compared to the control arm, which was, again, carbo, paclitaxel, Bev.